celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail, morgan-outdoors.com.
Next time on The Wahilode Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we round off our series of songs about means of transport with songs about ships. So please join me for Songs About Ships next Sunday afternoon at 3, right after Folk Plus.
There are multi-instrumentalists, and then there is Morgan Guerin. On the next episode of Jazz Night, we dive into the multi-dimensional mind of saxophonist, bassist, drummer, keyboardist, producer, composer, and engineer, whose solo work and collaborations have put him in a class of his own. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
Hey there, it's Jason Dole. I hope you're doing well. The good news is I have a party to go to tonight. The better news? So do you. The Lou Beach Community House Summer Jubilee benefiting Radio Catskill is tonight. Join us for live music by Kala Sun, Lolly and the Pops, DJ Jason Tuga, snacks, and beer from Catskill Brewery. Happening just north of Livingston Manor, the Lou Beach Community House Summer Jubilee, 5 to 8 tonight.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. Several years ago, I was driving along State Route 52 in Youngsville when I had to suddenly stop and pull over for a good look at an incredible metal sculpture. It was a basketball player, and I loved it. One can never say exactly what it is when you are attracted to a piece of art, but he really appealed to me. So imagine how happy I was years later to find him standing on the observation deck in Narrowsburg, New York, where I could get up close to him. It turns out he is Yao Ming, the 7'6" basketball player for the Houston Rockets. And I'm so happy to have his creator on the show today, Zach Javrick of Youngsville, New York. He is a metal sculptor, and as I discovered, much more. So please enjoy my conversation with Zach Javrick. Zach, welcome to Catskill Character. I'm so happy to have you with me today.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
Let's start by diving into your background and talk about your childhood. Because you started off right here. You were born at Harris Hospital.
That's right. Sullivan County, born and raised. My parents drove top speed up from the city to give birth to me on like a 90 degree day in the middle of the summer because Jamaica Hospital was overcrowded and it just didn't work for my mom that day. And I ended up being born here. So that was it. And then instead of going back to the city, we actually moved right up here, right when I was born.
That's like out of a movie.
Yeah, a little bit. it was kind of wild of what I hear.
Well, you attended the Hebrew Day School, grades kindergarten through eighth grade in Kiamisha Lake. What was that experience like?
It was like a very nice, small group that we had. Everybody was like, there's only maybe 8 or 11 of us, you know, for the entire experience. So you got a very tight-knit group. There was something really nice about that. And it was not something that's ever, I've never had another experience like that in my life. And I think it was very unique. And I think the half the day Hebrew and half the day English was a bit trying sometimes, but I learned a lot from it. And I think I take some of those lessons with me for the rest of my life.
Do you still speak Hebrew?
Doing my Duolingo, but it's not perfect. My wife will complain about that regularly, that my Hebrew's not at the level it should be.
Well, you know, from an early age, it appears that you knew you were an artist. This is a gift that a lot of children don't experience. They don't know who they are, what they want to do. But you did have influences. Would you tell us about J.J. Varonis?
Sure. JJ was a mentor of mine who I met when I was probably, I must have been 8 years old, something like that. And his work was very inspiring to me. I used to go to a place called it was in Long Island City. Oh, the old Macy's Warehouse. And the old Macy's Warehouse was covered in sculptures, like floor to ceiling, the entire thing. And as a little kid, for me, that was like Wonderland. And I did everything in my power to find all the people that made this Macy's Warehouse. And I encountered JJ, and I went to his shop and I put a note on his door and said, "Hey, I'm a little welder kid and I want to meet you." My dad took me out of school because the next day he called up and he was like, "Yeah, come on by." So we drove to the city one day to not find him. And then he found the note. He called me the next day. We drove back a day later and we're just like, you know, been connected ever since. And he was teaching me his little tricks and his techniques and let me dive into his scrap pile and weld his stuff together. So he was a great mentor for many, many years.
Wow. That's a story about intention, among other things.
Absolutely, yeah. I was very driven to meet my idols as a kid. I also did the same thing with Kenny Scharf, the famous painter who's all over New York City. So that was another exciting, like, I got to meet this guy.
So how old were you actually when you realized that you were an artist?
Well, I think it was sort of just like something I was born with because my dad was a sculptor. And he was doing Judaica sculptures at the time. And he was a single father. So he'd go in the shop and then I'd be in the house and I would just follow him into the shop. And so while he was working on one thing, he'd say, "Okay, you work on this side of the table and put a little sculpture together and I'll weld it up for you." So at a really young age, instead of doodling, although I also doodled, he would have me doodle in metal and then make little sculptures. And by the time I was 5 years old, I was, making my own welds and not even letting anybody else touch the welding machine. I had to do it all myself at that point. So I've been doing it my whole life.
That's amazing. You know, it makes you think. Sometimes I see these reels on Facebook of these little tiny kids playing instruments like they're, you know, 30 years old. And you wonder, sometimes you wonder about reincarnation, you know, like, I once had a patient who sat down at the piano when she was 3 years old and just started playing. And it sounds like you're in that category. It just does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, I think a lot of it was circumstance, you know, when you're a little kid and you have a single father and you look up to him for everything and he's in the shop and it's only a few paces away from where you're hanging out. It's easy to follow in. And my dad was very, very encouraging. So whenever he saw a talent, he loved to like coach it out of people. He saw that I had a propensity to, you know, weld and sculpt and make art and draw monsters. And, you know, I really was doing that from a young age and he was always just pushing me to do it more. So
fantastic.
That was always my thing.
But was your dad a teacher as well?
He did do a little bit of teaching. Yeah. I mean, he taught welding, especially when I was a little kid, we would teach welding classes even together. So he would take students, private students. He taught a couple different classes like that throughout my life. And then we've always actually taught people to weld for probably my whole life, essentially.
It's wonderful. Your mother moved to Israel when you were 7. What kind of an impact did that have on you?
Well, you know, it was a jarring thing as a kid. You kind of grow up expecting that. And then she had to make that transition for herself. And it was a necessary thing for her. And it was really tough. It was hard to deal with. But, you know, my dad stepped up and became kind of both father and mother, which I think has been tough on him to this day and tough on me as well. But, you know, you have to roll with these punches. And my mom would come back for couple months at a time. And then I would visit her on weekends whenever she was around. And her presence in the city kind of gave me a sort of half upstate, half citified lifestyle that kind of relished. You know, I loved my time in the city. Just being in the city was always like very important to me. I would play basketball in Kew Gardens and Forest Park. And when I came back home, I felt like a little bit more urban than everybody else around me, which I loved. You know, I like to be a little bit entrenched in that city life.
Yeah. Well, that's you made lemonade out of lemons in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it had its value for sure.
So Barry Shaverick, your father, as you mentioned, is also a metal sculptor. And I'm guessing, I don't have to guess because really you said he had a huge impact on your artistic life from the very beginning. And that, I think that's an incredible experience. But, you know, sometimes, like you're saying, you could have too much of a good thing.
Yes.
<yeah. laughs> But no, my dad, bless.
My dad, he started as an iron worker working in Israel for the IDF, making like just grinding railings or ladders or whatever, just basic stuff. And he fell in love with metal, like head over heels in love with the just the medium. And he knew as soon as he was, you know, mid-20s and this, that he touched it as a job, that was it for the rest of his life. And that's it for him. He's only done metal work since then. And he became a Judaica sculptor right around the time I was born. So he transitioned from doing like kind of wrought iron railings and window guards to being a full-time sculptor. And he did this massive Jewish themed sculpture garden for a big client of his. And I actually would help on a lot of those sculptures. I would paint them or I would help design some of them, even as like a very young kid. And the client used to love my opinion. And even when I was 5, 6 years old, she started to commission me for a little work. She had a collection. She had a collection of see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil monkeys. So I think my first commission was making her a little metal set of those monkeys.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yep. And, you know, my dad always encouraged it and was happy to like share his clients or, you know, push his clients on me. And we did have a thing that we would do when we would go visit my mom in the city. She lived on 64th Street and Broadway. And we would go to the corner of the street and we would set up all my little sculptures and we'd sell them on the street for like $20.
Wow. And I bet you sold a lot of them.
Sold a lot. And I made a lot of really cool connections and I met interesting people. And I ended up meeting all the people who worked at Children's Television Workshop. They were the people who made the video games for Sesame Street. So they all bought little sculptures for me and they taught me like little Photoshop techniques and animation techniques, even when I was a little kid. So
I got to ask you this. How was school for you? School must have been so boring compared to your life outside of school.
Well, in elementary school, I was known for just not being there a lot. You know, my dad would just take me out either to go work on a job together or to just go see some art in the city or a gallery or, you know, an artist that we wanted to meet. So I was constantly skipping school and doing that. But that was in elementary school. Once high school came around, I felt it was a little bit harder to kind of play hooky and I had to buckle down a lot more to, you know, stay abreast of all the curriculum.
Right. So speaking of high school, after you graduated from Liberty High School, you went to SUNY Purchase. And I thought the story about how you got your portfolio together was really worth repeating. Would you mind?
Yeah. So I applied to one school. I applied to Skidmore College and my math grades weren't what they wanted. So I didn't get in. And then it was sort of like almost the end of the year. And my dad and I and my sister, we went to PepsiCo just to go to see the art. We went to go see the sculpture garden at PepsiCo in Westchester, just randomly. And as we're driving in to turn the corner to PepsiCo, we see a sign, Portfolio Review Day is on like Sunday, you know, and this is on Friday. And we're like, oh, well, maybe there's an opportunity there. And so we went around to like a couple friends, collectors who had sculptures of mine and had nice cameras. And we did like this big photo shoot. And then we looked up all the requirements for their portfolio. And we went and bought like a blank portfolio book and just put something together right on the spot that weekend. And I stayed up all night drawing a self-portrait. That was one of the requirements. And I got in. And that was my collegiate life for the next 4 years there.
Fantastic. You know, if we're lucky, and this doesn't always happen, we have at least one teacher who gets us, who sees us, or in your case, sees your work and gets it. You had one teacher like that, correct?
Yes, his name was Phil Listengart. He's a bronze casting and sculpture teacher at Purchase. And I think Purchase was kind of split in viewpoints. There was a lot of, more kind of theoretical kind of ideas rolling around. And then some people had the more like, you know, just get down to work, brass tacks kind of mindset. And I fit more with the brass tacks, like just kind of there. It's kind of hard to explain the exact dichotomy that was going on at Purchase at the time, but me and a group of friends, we really fell in line with Phil, who taught broadcasting, and just had this sort of magical way of inspiring his students to like want to make more art and make better art and just do the best art that they themselves had in them. And I really think he was just an amazing mentor and teacher. And we had this little group, 4 or 5 kids who just like surrounded him and took like every word he said to heart. And we used to go on trips to the Metropolitan Museum of Art almost on a monthly basis. And that was just like an amazing, amazing experience.
Mm. That's a teacher you want your kids to have.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or that you want to have.
Yeah. I mean, he used to do a lot of continuing education. So there would be students who were his student for 20 to 30 years who'd been taking the same bronze casting class over and over again, just because it was so great.
Wonderful. Okay, I think we're going to take a break here, Zach, and we'll come back in a minute. You've been listening to Catskill Character on WJFF Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is the artist Zach Javrick. I'm not pronouncing it. Javrick.
Javrick.
Javrick. I want to give it a French, zing.
You could also do Zach Max. Everybody knows.
We're gonna hear about Zach Max when we come back. Okay. So we'll be right back.
Last week on Wait Wait, we provided a model of reasoned debate.
Well, you shut up.
No, you shut up.
This is the good old days.
There we go.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for a respectful back and forth with legendary sportscaster Bob Costas on this week's Wait Wait from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Another way to help us bring you the news is donate a vehicle you don't need. Car, truck, motorcycle, you can donate to this station and it could mean hundreds of dollars of support. Thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not. Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. If you've just joined us, I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and today's guest is the artist, Zach Javrick.
Javrick.
It's a beautiful name, by the way. In the first half of the show, Zach told us about growing up in Bethel, New York, and attending the Hebrew Day School until he went to ninth grade, where he attended Liberty High School, which was quite a different experience, but he had a great time there. He would have preferred going to an arts high school in California or New York City, I'm sure, because he can't remember a time when he didn't make art. This is a gift certainly not every child has. To be able to recognize their own artistic gifts at such an early age and to know with certainty what they want to do with their life. In the second half of the show, we're going to hear what Zach has done with this gift. Here we go. So Zach, after college, what are some of the things you did?
Right after college, my dad and I chose to travel quite a bit. We moved to a couple different places for the winters because it was always so cold in Sullivan County and we always wanted to kind of establish a second base. So we started by doing a road trip to California where we brought a whole bunch of sculpture, set up shop in Watsonville, California for a while. And I sculpted there for some time and then came back here to Sullivan County again and then went on another trip to Israel where we set up shop in Israel for a while, teaching students in Israel, working on an organic farm where I was making sculpture, just a whole ton of different random things.
That's really wonderful. And it's so nice that you did all this with your father. Can't break away from Barry. And who wants to? Tell us us about your place in Youngsville, where I first encountered Yao.
My wife and I bought a house in Youngsville about 6 years ago, and I am very excited just to be turning that into a new studio. I'm going to be doing blacksmithing and welding here. It's only 20 minutes from where I was born and raised. So I was born and raised in Ferndale, New York, in the Bethel area. And it's been a great transition. And we're really digging into Youngsville, making it happen over here.
So do you live at that site also, or is that just going to be a studio now?
That's also where I live. And it's going to be a studio. In fact, I think the guys are here today building the shop, the new shop.
Oh, that is so great. Would you mind sharing the process of creating one of these huge metal sculptures? And I want to say before we move on to that, you moved around a lot with your father, but going to Israel proved to be a really good decision because, as you just mentioned, you got married. You met your wife in Israel.
That's right. My wife was on the organic farm where we met.
Okay.
So she was volunteering at the cheese farm, which is where we were. They had a goat and goat cheese farm, and we built a little welding shop connected to that farm, and they would send the volunteers who would work on that farm to learn to weld over at the shop where I was teaching, and also all the farmers' kids and anyone who wanted to learn. So we would teach anybody, and my wife was an unbelievable welder from the first moment. She was able to like weld the perfect seams, the perfect like kind of construction level welds that you would see on like a bridge or something in the city. And I was like, wow, incredible. She ended up becoming the assistant to me in the shop because we had a big commission there to make a giant piece for the front of the community that we met in. So we built this giant figure kind of reaching his hand up to the sky, covered in vines and dripping with peppers and grapes and fruit because wow. It was in a farming community. So we mm-hmm. wanted to like represent that. And my wife was such a good welder that within the first month, she was already sculpting this piece with me or fabricating it with me and for me as like my assistant welder. The process involves lots and lots of little pieces. So we put all these little pieces together and then you weld them to create the form so that you get like a nice shape.
Do you start with a drawing first?
Yeah, that one definitely started with a drawing first. I don't always start with a drawing, but usually on the large scale stuff. If it's for somebody, it's a commission, or it has something that has to get approved, then I'll draw it up.
There's so much that must go into those large pieces because you have to know about balance. And it's not just the artistic aspect. It's not just the skill of welding, but it's a whole conglomeration of skills.
I've gotten really good with the balance. I feel like a lot of my giant sculptures, they don't always, but a lot of times they have 2 feet. And I'll stand them up before welding them to a base. And usually 9 out of 10 times, the piece will freestand without anything attached to the feet. I've developed sort of like a structural understanding of the work that helps me balance everything nicely. But yeah, there's definitely like an order of operations that I always have to think about. Sometimes I'll fabricate the body parts separately and then weld them all together. Different ways of going about it. But there's definitely a lot to think about. The bigger pieces.
There's also painting involved because I know like Yao had a uniform on. It was, you know, there was color on him.
Yep. Yao gets a new uniform every now and again. Yao Ming.
Oh, he does.
we gave him a throwback jersey a couple years ago, you know, for the Rockets, like when they were wearing the throwback jerseys. Sometimes it'll be hand painted. Sometimes it'll be spray painted and we'll tape off different parts. Usually he'll just get a fresh layer of polyurethane to keep them crispy. The metal ultimately wants to rust. So when you paint it, it's got upkeep. But if you leave it rusty, then some people like that look and you just kind of let that happen. I personally like it rusty or polished and then polyurethane. And that's something that works really well indoors. But you can't really get the polished polyurethane look to stay too long outdoors.
Well, Yao is kind of a combination of the two.
A little, yeah, exactly. He's got some color and he's got some rust. He's got some polyurethane. So,
and
he's someone right near me. So I can always just mess around and clean him up.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, he's almost iconic at this point. If somebody wanted to buy him, would you like do it or does he mean too much?
I mean, this is what I do for a living. So everything, well, not everything. I do have a couple pieces I won't sell, but almost everything is for sale.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it was definitely available.
You have to let your babies go.
You do. It's absolutely true. That's what I do.
Yeah. It's interesting that you do these huge sculptures, but you also make very small pieces, and you've been doing animation with them. What got you into that?
Right. Actually, after I was in college, doing little videos, stop motion videos of me building the sculptures on like these early kind of cheap digital cameras. And I would keep breaking them, but it kind of developed where the sculptures would kind of form and I would try and throw a little bit of motion into them. And I realized that at one point I was like, maybe I can try and do a full character that was moving. And I went for it and it worked. And I was just kind of baffled that it was possible. And from then, I just kept going and kept doing it. So I've been trying to make these small figures move and walk around and do all those different things.
You've got some exciting things going on in Youngsville, and I'd love for you to share it with the listener.
Yeah, right now, actually, there's a new building being built. It's going to be a blacksmithing and welding shop. I'm calling it Zach Mack Studios. We're going to have welding classes, blacksmithing classes. It's obviously going to be my main shop where I'll build all my sculptures, but it's going to be sort of an open space where people can, if they get really into the work, they may want to rent a little spot or a little table where they can do their own thing. A very exciting new step for me that I've been pretty much waiting to take my whole life. So I'm really, really excited it's here and it's happening today, a lot of it. So exciting moment.
Didn't you do some classes this summer already?
We did in preparation for this new building. We're kind of bringing the classes to people, and we did an open class at New Memories, and we're going to be doing another one there. That's New Memories in Parksville.
What is New Memories?
New Memories used to be Memories. It was an old antique shop in Parksville, and it got bought by some friends of mine, and they have turned it into just the most amazing art space and performance and music. And I have a big sculpture show that's going on there at the moment. And there's paintings and they do these incredible high level performances and events that are just must see and really wonderful. Love to see that kind of stuff in the area.
Do you have a website for Zach Max or?
Oh, I have ZachMax.com. And more frequently updated is my Instagram, which is at zach.max. So that's ZAC.MAX. And the website is ZACMAX.com.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be looking for more of your sculptures in my travels through the Catskills. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an education.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been wonderful being here.
This has been Catskill Character on Radio Catskill with me, your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest, Zach Javrick of Youngsville, New York. Zach's website is zachmax.com. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Please join us then for more fantastic stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
All right.
SUNY Sullivan is now offering the SUNY Impact Foundation's New York State Charitable Tax Credit Program, which makes a powerful difference for students while providing tax benefits to donors. Individuals can make a charitable gift of $10,000 to $100,000 to the SUNY Impact Foundation, designate the funds to benefit SUNY Sullivan, and receive up to an 85% New York State tax credit. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Paid for by SUNY Sullivan.
On this Old House Radio Hour, before you hire a contractor, listen to ours as we break down what you need to ask before signing anything.
If you see diagonal cracks, that might mean that the house is shifting a little bit. The worst would be if you see a horizontal crack. That's going to be a pretty major foundation issue.
Plus, New Yorker editor-in-chief David Remnick remembers the Moscow apartment he called home. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour.
Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Hello, this is Thane Peterson, host of Living Jazz. Please join me this Saturday when Living Jazz will pay tribute to Andrew Hill, one of the greatest composers and pianists in the history of jazz. The playlist was chosen in conjunction with trumpeter Ron Horton, one of our local jazz luminaries who toured with Andrew Hill. That's Living Jazz pays tribute to Andrew Hill this Saturday at noon. on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.